It's the call that most of us will never have to make, but if or when we do, it's probably going to be during one of the most scary events of our lives. What happens when we ring 999, and what do we have to do to get help to us as quick as possible? Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hey, it's Alex Rowley here, sitting in this week for Sean Defoe. If you've never rang 999 or 112 before, well then, first of all, lucky you. It's not really an experience that I recommend, but it is nice to know that the people on the other end of the phone are there to help, and they're extremely well trained. For those of us that have rang, well, we know this already, and in this episode, I'll visit the nucleus of both the fire service and the ambulance service in Ireland, the control rooms. Before we do, let's just break down how they work in Ireland. Well, for the ambulance service, their call takers are based in a place known as the National Emergency Operations Centre, or NEOC for short. The centre is split across two sites, one in Talla in Dublin, the other is in Ballyshannon in Donegal. In the fire brigade then, a little bit more complicated, but thankfully not too much, bear with me. They have three regional control centres, one in the east, one in the west, and one in the south. The southern centre is based in Limerick. It handles fire calls for Munster. The western one in Castlebar and Mayo handles fire calls for Connacht and Donegal. But in today's episode, we'll speak to the staff in the eastern one, which is in Dublin. And it's unique, actually, because it handles fire and ambulance calls for Dublin, while also handling fire calls for Leinster, Cavan and Monaghan. So let's start with the basics. You're in trouble.
Something's gone wrong, and you need the emergency services. What exactly happens from the moment you dial those three numbers?
Well, to get an idea, let's talk to Stephen Cleary. He's a firefighter and paramedic now at Dublin Fire Brigade, but he used to work in their regional communication centre.
So initially the caller dials 999 or 112. They're connected with the emergency call answering service. They state the nature and the location of the emergency, so whether that's they need the fire brigade in Dublin, the ambulance in Dublin, the ambulance in Cork. The call taker will then route the call to the appropriate call handling centre. So if it's for the ambulance in Dublin city centre, you'd be put through to control room here. Your call is answered by one of the call takers outside. They gather information, they'll build a rapport with the caller as well. I used to give my name, I'd get the caller's name as well, and if the caller is panicked, we can kind of refer to their name and tell them,
listen John, listen to me, I'm going to tell you what to do,
and it kind of just brings everything back down so we can gather the information that we need and give them the advice that they need. Once the caller gets connected to us, they'll be asked their address twice. That's to make sure when people are panicked they might give the wrong address, they might give their home address, and they could be in their family members. We'll ask them to confirm their phone number. We'll ask them to tell us exactly what happened. We go through a list of questions. We ask them if the patient's awake, if the patient's breathing. And then from there, we select a certain scenario. We ask them questions based on that scenario. And then it allows us to offer them advice and to tell them what to do while they're waiting for the ambulance to arrive. We're prepared to give advice on all scenarios.
But sometimes you might not be at your home address. As Stephen has said, you could be at someone else's address, or maybe you're in the middle of nowhere. And in that case, what are you going to do to get help to you? Well, Kevin McLaughlin is a call taker with the National Ambulance Service in their Talla Control Centre, and he's got some tips.
There's an app out there that you can use. It's called the Watch Reward. So for example, if you're on holidays out camping and you don't know where you are, there's an app that you can download called Watch Rewards, and it will connect with us and it will tell you the three words that's on your app, and we can put it into the system on our end and it will give us exactly your location.
You mentioned what three words there, other ways people you can locate people and how they can make themselves more visible to the ambulance.
Yeah, so obviously knowing your air codes, the locate code and what three words. We can also send a text message to people's phones as well. We do need to make sure that these phones have the location services turned on and they are able to open the link in their phone. If they have anything blocked on it, it might be a difficulty, but a great way as well is if they're using Google Maps and their location is turned on, they are able to find their latitude and longitude. So we can then input that into the system also and find them that way.
And another clever tip is from Stephen Cleary back in the fire service, who has this advice if you're on the motorway.
There's what we call location reference indicators, and the next time you're travelling on a motorway. If you look out on the left-hand side of the motorway, every 500 metres, there'll be a blue sign. And that sign will tell you the motorway you're on, the direction you're travelling in, and your mile marker, if you like. So if you're on the M7 and you're travelling eastbound, it'll tell you your 30 kilometres. So if you ring and you give us that location, we'll be able to find you. If you don't see one of those signs, something like your nearest junction, the direction that you're travelling in, if you've just passed a toll plaza or another landmark or town.
Okay, so while you are asking for the ambulance and while you're giving your details, it might be nice to know what's going on in the background. This is Shauna Connolly. She's a dispatcher with the National Ambulance Service.
So if somebody, let's say, calls an ambulance to get through to the call taker, and while the call taker's taking the call, what are you doing?
So as soon as they get a 999 call, they press the button, they enter an address, and if it's in the area that I am dispatching, it comes up screen. And then I'm immediately looking at what resources are available, what's close by, if it is a higher acuity call, what may need to be pulled from one to go to this one. So it depends on what the call taker's putting in, but everything they put in on that side of the room comes straight over to me on my computer.
So Shauna is essentially the point of contact between the call centre and the paramedics actually out on the ground.
We take messages from them to pass to the hospital. So we give pre-alerts or ASHICEs. We take the details and then I speak to the hospital and inform them of what is coming in, what's going on with the patient and how far away they are.
And everyone I'm speaking to assures me that these questions don't delay your response. In fact, it actually speeds things up if you can answer as many as you can. So it's easier said than done, but be patient.
So it's important that you stay on the line with the call taker because they can guide you through so many different scenarios from childbirth to CPR.
This is Rachel, by the way, a duty supervisor at the National Ambulance Services Control Centre in Tallaght.
To controlling bleeding, they can pretty much help in any situation.
You mentioned there, obviously, a car, a bike or an ambulance could be on the way to you. How do you decide what units to send? Is it seriousness or is it simply what's available or a bit of a mix?
So we will always send the nearest available ambulance to the highest priority call. Our calls are prioritised by colour. So our highest priority colour is purple and they will always get the nearest ambulance. And they will also get more than one response vehicle as well. As you move down through the priorities, the next available ambulance will be sent to the red call and then the next furthest out to the amber call.
So as you heard there, Rachel is talking about the way they divide calls into which ones are more serious than others. It's safe to say that the ambulance service gets a lot of calls that actually could be dealt with by callers themselves. Let's go back to Shauna.
So you have a certain number of resources. If your resources are, you know, stretched, if you've got a lot of calls, you just have to juggle what you can. Like the higher acuity calls, unfortunately, when we're busy, they may have to wait. And that's where it comes into if you've rang and it is something that you can see possibly the out of hours doctor or go to the pharmacy or make your own way to hospital. That's when it's really important because people could be waiting a long time. Unfortunately, with how busy it could be, with how little resources we have.
So that's what happens from the moment you dial 999 till the time that the emergency services arrive at your door. But what are some of the most common myths? Let's go over to the fire service and let's talk to Station Officer Kevin Finn in the control centre there.
There is a common myth, I suppose, there that when people dial 999, they presume that they're going to be talking to their local fire station, and that isn't actually the case. So when you dial 999, first of all, you get through to the ECAS operator. They ask you which service you require, and when you ask for the fire service, they'll put you through to the relevant regional communication centre, and it's them who then notify and liaise with your local senior fire officers in order to get help to you as soon as possible.
Now, some people might laugh that even has to be said, but it's a common thing that people think. They think you're ringing the person who's actually going to be at your door. But back to the ambulance service, because this one actually is quite important to know, and it can save a lot of the ambulance service's resources if you know this one.
Everybody's triaged the same way in the hospital as you would be triaged over the phone here. So if you pull up in an ambulance with a lady walked in with chest pain who's a lot sicker than you, she's going to be seen before you and you will be then waiting in the ambulance. So if you do can make your own way, I suggest you do. But if you do really need it, just call us straight away.
Now, if you're listening to this, you might be thinking, hang on, I kind of want to make a difference and, you know, work in that environment. Well, Rachel in the National Ambulance Service says that they are always recruiting.
It's a fantastic opportunity for anyone who's interested in pre-hospital emergency care. The training is fantastic. You get taught everything you need to know once you come in, so you don't have to have any previous knowledge whatsoever. We will teach you everything. You'll be guided through your training the whole way. And there's so much room for progression. So you can come in as a call taker or controller, and then you move into dispatch. Then we have our QIU department. We have our training team. So there's lots of different areas you can move into once you've joined.
And I also caught up with Sonia Hughes, who is a call taker with the Fire Brigade's Eastern Regional Control Centre. And she's only in the job a few months now at this stage, but she seems to be enjoying it.
I saw, obviously, it was being advertised there, and I thought it would be something I would love to do, be able to serve my community. Well, I had a successful application. I undertook an 8-week training course here then in our training centre, the O'Brien Institute, followed by a 4-week mentorship here in the control room.
Is it challenging, the training? Is it, you know, would you recommend it as well?
I would absolutely recommend it. It's the first call there to helping people to get and help out to you there. So it is something I would definitely recommend.
In terms of memorable calls for you in the job, has there been any so far?
I think ones that would stand out to me is somebody that is maybe in cardiac arrest and you have to instruct the caller to do CPR there until crew arrive. So it's just when we do come across a call like that, it's important we stay on the line. We're there helping them, instructing them. We are sending the nearest ambulance, the nearest fire truck, and also the advanced paramedic as well. So we stay on the phone with them until help arrives, until the crew actually is there by their side.
Is there ever a case where somebody might ring, obviously you're talking them through it, and then a fire truck shows up and they're thinking, I rang for an ambulance, there's something wrong here?
Absolutely. And in Dublin Fire Brigade, we have the dual role of firefighter paramedic. So we are, anyone on the fire truck there on the fire engine, they are paramedics as well.
It's not like that across the country in the fire service, just in Dublin, where they have firefighter and paramedics.
There you have it. That's the process from start to finish of ringing 999, getting through to an ambulance or the fire service, and getting them to your door, and then also how you can be one of these people involved in this process.
If anything, I hope that this has provided insight, and that, you know, while I hope you never have to ring the emergency services, maybe this might help for the next time you do. It might calm the nerves just a little bit, and also it might help our frontline staff get to you quicker. Thank you for listening to this episode of Let Me Explain. My thanks as well to Dublin Fire Brigade and the National Ambulance Service for letting me come in and chat to their members and also see just what goes on behind the scenes. This episode was produced and presented by me, Alex Rowley, with John Keogh on editorial and Lachlan Hart on sound. Don't forget to follow the podcast or subscribe on the NewsTalk app powered by GoLoud, or wherever you get your podcasts, and share it with your friends.